The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. My name is Kay Murray, this is Alejandro Moreno, and we're going to be looking back on what happened in the Champions League today. Chelsea under Graham Potter. We've got to see how they look for the first time now that his era is underway. Well, it was a 1-1 draw with Salzburg, a goal from Raheem Sterling to open things up, but Noah Okafor managed to level things out for Salzburg, and Chelsea, as it stands, are rock bottom of Group E after the first two rounds of action, as we now welcome in Frank Leboeuf, Julien Laron and Craig Burley. I will start with you, Frank. What did you think of what you got to see of Potter's Chelsea? A first look at them today.
Well, I didn't expect too much, you know, because it's not in maybe a week that you will see changes and you have to get rid of the bad habits, I would say. And I saw it again many, many times, especially the first half, where you could see the... Sometimes you have the reflex to go back and to make a pass where you should go vertically, maybe try something, take on the players and go more direct, which is not the case for many, many players because they used to keep the ball and get the possession without doing many things with the ball. But I have to say I was disappointed by the performance of Chelsea today. Nothing much to say about the first half where you have maybe half of a chance. They scored a goal in the second half because of a mistake from the defender. They tried to press the last 10 minutes, as always, you know, like an emergency safety, you know, they go for it. But overall, I think the draw is fair for the Salzburg team. They would have to work very hard to change all the bad habits to be more direct in the way that I like football and the way I see football without trying to get the possession of the ball, especially if it's completely useless.
Craig, what did you take away from Chelsea and how they were set up today?
Well, not a lot because I was really watching the Man City game, but I was trying to keep my eye on it. You know, obviously, he was just looking to take a victory at all costs. As Frank said, he's not been in the job that long, so there's only so much you can do. But again, creating chances, and Brozier came on at the end, missed a couple of good chances, the youngster to get off the mark for Chelsea, and he's back there after his loan at Southampton. And I suppose, you know, an experienced Thiago Silva, really with a poor challenge out in the left-back position that allowed Salzburg to get their equaliser. So, yeah, lots of work to be done. And, you know, Aubameyang still looking to get off the mark. He got game time, but yeah, no real big surprises in the performance.
How much can you judge Graham Potter then on this first performance?
Well, not a lot. But I still think that you can point out some things that could have and should have been different. Frank just alluded to the last 10, 15 minutes of the game and the difference that we saw from Chelsea then because they were desperate. I'm not saying that you're desperate from minute one, but at the very least have the intent of an attack and the intent on being a presence in the attacking half. And they had some of that at times, isolating Raheem Sterling down the left-hand side. He found himself in a lot of space, particularly in the first half. But they just couldn't generate that with any sort of consistency, and they were not getting a whole lot of productivity for anybody else. It was a performance of a team that, yes, they're trying to find themselves, but there is a lack of confidence throughout because of the recent history and the recent lack of success. And so, therefore, this is going to take some time. Now, the question is, do they have the time in order for everybody to get settled down and figure out what is it that Graham Potter wants them to do on the field? They better get going soon.
Oh, well, there's been a lot of talk about Chelsea this week in the press, and it's off the field matters. Todd Bowley has been talking about how he can change things up in the Premier League and Americanize things, shall we say. Mm. He actually had a lot to say about this, suggesting an all-star game. Let's hear about what he had to say with those ideas, starting with a relegation playoff system.
Those relegation games are some of the highest broadcast games. I mean, ultimately, I hope that the Premier League takes a little bit of a lesson from American sports and really starts to figure out, you know, why wouldn't we do a tournament? You know, with the bottom four teams? Why isn't there an All-Star game? I mean, people are talking about more money for the pyramid. You know, MLB did their All-Star game in LA this year. We made $200 million from, you know, a Monday and a Tuesday. You know, so, you know, I think you could do a North versus South, you know, All-Star game for Premier League and fund whatever the pyramid needed very easily.
I have to imagine you've had conversations along those lines with some of your fellow owners. Are they supportive?
Yeah, listen, I think that everyone likes the idea of you know, more revenue for the league. I think that, you know, there's a cultural aspect that, you know, is just, you know, is real. And I think, you know, I think evolution will come.
Tell us, Jules, what's the reaction been in England to this?
Well, you can imagine that it got people talking a lot, of course. I mean, the one who took it lightly in a way by saying, okay, I'm going to make my North team and I'm going to make my South team and I'm going to do this. And then the ones who took it more seriously, like Jurgen Klopp, who was not happy at all yesterday when we mentioned it and asked him after his Liverpool win, by saying like, well, he hasn't waited that long, Todd Boehly, to start and talking. He's been in the Premier League for 2 minutes and already he's got great ideas to change the whole way things are working. All-Star game, relegation tournament, he called it. And there were more beauties, to be fair, in that kind of interview that he gave or that conference that he did, really, one including his own academy, for example. So, I mean, I'm all for new ideas. I just think you've been there 2 minutes. And I think that's why a lot of people here in England, the critics came from that sense, like you've been here 2 minutes and already you start going on about All-Star games and being more Americans and taking ideas from American sports, he said, as we heard in that little clip that we showed. I think that's not the way to go with the Premier League and other clubs, I think.
Craig, just in case anybody missed last night's extra time, can you just reiterate what your feelings are on the All-Star game?
Well, I did a digital hit on it this morning as well. So this is round three. Horse manure. Absolute horse manure. Let me point out some things here. He's talking about relegation. And they do this in other leagues, by the way, where they have playoffs within the relegation from different tiers. What American sport has relegation? What American sport has relegation? Unless I'm missing something, the answer is none. So what the hell does he know about relegation? Because his sports don't have it. What they have over here, they reward not even mediocrity, they reward garbage. That's what they do. You can finish the bottom of the league in most of these sports and you get a bucket full of cash. You don't get relegated. That's first and foremost. The second thing is, he's talking about $200 million or whatever it is. Has he not watched the graph just grow and grow and the amount of money that Premier League makes around the world? I mean, it is making a fortune. It has gone up every year as broadcasters pay more and more and more. So they don't need the money. They certainly don't need the extra game. And frankly, there would be no appetite from players. There certainly would be no appetite from managers. And I really don't think there's any appetite at all from the supporters. Supporters want to support their own teams. What they don't want, in my opinion, is some claptrap Americanized plastic rivalry invention, right? Todd Boehly has got enough on his cards, on his plate, trying to rebuild this Chelsea team to compete with the best. So, listen, have your opinion, that's fine. But it's nothing more than in-the-door 2 minutes claptrap. Trust me. Can you imagine phoning Kevin De Bruyne and Mo Salah? You know when Todd Boehly pitched up at their house to see if they wanted to play in the North v South game? They'd open the curtains and stick two fingers up at them. Sod off. Got enough games. Sod off. Go back to London. Seriously. Never heard so much nonsense.
Did you enjoy that rant, Frank?
Good.
Oh, yes, that's Craig at his best, you know, and I love it because he's right. He's right. I think Mr. Boehly should have taken it easy because, I mean, you just arrived. I mean, football has one third of the existence of the US, you know, and the culture, what we built in Europe and all around the world from people who love football and love that way of playing with the relegation, with the risk of going down, you know, financially be at risk as well, is of course not part of the US culture. But when you come into a new world, accept, you know, the rules from the past, or at least digest a little bit your entrance and, you know, see, and, you know, and then maybe try to change that. But it's true, it's a little bit too soon to try to change the world of that football. and I think Craig is, the comment of Craig is high, but it's only fair.
Could you imagine British ownership bundling into the United States and taking over the Dallas Cowboys or whatever it is, the 49ers, and telling everybody they had no scooby what they're talking about and there's going to be relegation? They would be thrown at in the Atlantic Ocean and told to swim back across the pond. It's pie in the sky nonsense, Kay.
Have you got anything to say in favour of it, Ale?
In favour of it? No. The timing could not be any more wrong from the perspective of Toe Bowley, in that he's got his own issues with his own club. Figure out your own club, and then you can go out and pitch ideas about how is it that you fix the Premier League or add value to the Premier League. And I think the other thing that is a major issue here is the lack of understanding of cultural differences and how clubs and fans view themselves within a league and what their value and their presence and their place is within that league. I understand that you may have brilliant ideas, and maybe there will be a time and a place where you actually present those ideas, but the time is not now, because there is enough skepticism as an American owner coming into the Premier League without you having said anything or done anything. There's already skepticism. You walking in the door, it already creates questions, and people are not sure as to what your qualifications are. And now you add this into the conversation. It's unnecessary, and it's not the time to do it. Figure out your club first, and then we can move on into perhaps floating out ideas that maybe are not considered claptrap.
It's a perfect segue, because you said people are wondering what his qualifications are. Chelsea fans wondering what he and his people know about building a championship-winning football side. Well, he had this message for them.
They're wondering how a bunch of Americans and a Swiss billionaire with no history in the game could possibly know anything about building a championship team. So let's address that skepticism. What do you know?
I think we know people. We know human capital. And I think we understand game plans and strategies. And yeah, we're not expecting to be, you know, the football experts to find the best talent. We're going to put those people in place. And I think it's no different than running any human capital business, where it's all about getting the right resources, making them collaborate, getting them organized, thinking about, you know, how you have, you know, a global business at a local level. Our vision for the club was finding a manager who really wanted to collaborate with us, a coach who really wanted to collaborate. You know, I think there's a lot of walls to break down at Chelsea. And, you know, before, the first team, for example, in the academy didn't really share data. They didn't share information about, you know, where the top players were coming from. So our goal is to really bring, you know, a team together that, you know, with the academy, with the first team, with the incremental clubs that we want to acquire and develop, all of that needs to be, you know, a well-oiled machine. And the reality of our decision was that we just weren't sure that Thomas saw it the same way we saw it. And no one's right or wrong. It was just we didn't have a shared vision for the future. And it wasn't about Zagreb. It was really about, you know, the shared vision for what we wanted to Chelsea Football Club to look like. And, you know, it wasn't a decision that was made, you know, as a result of a single win or loss. It was a decision that was made really about what we thought was the right vision for the club.
We'll get to the coaching point in just a moment. But Craig, I was wondering what you thought of the terms talking about human capital, global business, we know people. How does that sit with you?
Oh, it's, at the day, it's just rhetoric, isn't it? And, you know, it is about people. It's about people skills, and it's about making good decisions. I would suggest his decision, I mean, I think his decision to hire Graham Potter, on the face of it, is a very good one. But this was a guy and a consortium that made a decision to allow Thomas Tuchel to pretty much handpick his summer targets, pay the money because there was no Bruce Buck, Granit Xhaka or Petr Cech as intermediaries, and then sack him. So that's hardly collaboration and good business sense. So, yeah, it's all sort of just rhetoric. At the end of the day, the proof will be in the pudding long term within the results and whether they are dominant again and can be competitive across all the major competitions.
So has he really been playing that role then, Jules, as sporting director?
Yeah, it has, I would say, unfortunately, for Chelsea Football Club and for Thomas Tuchel, because I think we're touching at the heart of the problem. The clip we've just heard, he said, well, we wanted Thomas Tuchel to collaborate with us. Why would Thomas Tuchel collaborate with someone who knows nothing about football? Why would Thomas Tuchel collaborate with someone who says to him, hey, why don't you play 4-4-3? Why would Thomas Tuchel collaborate with someone who says five times to him in the summer, through the summer, hey, what about Cristiano Ronaldo? And every time Thomas Tuchel says, listen, it would not work. This is not how we play. It doesn't really fit what we do. This would not work. And yet he would come back and come back with Cristiano and Cristiano and Cristiano. Why would Thomas Tuchel collaborate with someone like this? I understand that it was in a situation where there was nobody else because, as Craig said, Marina left, Petr Cech left, Bruce Buck left, other people left. So in the end, it was Ekbali and Boli who had to do that kind of job. But they didn't know the players. They didn't know who Rafinha was. They'd never heard of him before trying to sign him, for example. If you're Thomas Tuchel, you get to a point where there's no dialogue with those people because they don't understand. It's not the same language. And it's not a criticism to Todd Boehly. He just doesn't know football. This is all new to him. But you can't blame Thomas Tuchel for not wanting to collaborate with you when it's impossible to collaborate with you because it's a sport that you know nothing about. And that's where I find the justification of his sacking a little bit too much, because tell us the real reasons then. Don't give me the youth team data. That makes no sense. Thomas Tuchel used to go to watch the under-19s and the reserve. If he wanted to know the data of this right back or that striker from the academy, he would find it. It's easy. So it just didn't give us the real reason why he sacked him. And the real reason, they didn't get on. They didn't see eye to eye. They didn't get on. But Thomas Tuchel grew frustrated by who he had to talk to in this summer in terms of recruitment and everything, because they knew nothing about football and they still don't.
Do you agree with what Jules is saying, Frank?
I do. I do. And it's crazy because when I hear that type of people, you know, talking about football when you know nothing, reminds me the thousands and thousands and of people that I met around all over my life, you know, talking to me about football, being at least fans, so thinking that they knew something about football, where being in a business of football, I know exactly how it works and the human aspect of the game and the old knowledge that you need to get in order to be successful. And suddenly you see somebody coming who has no acknowledge whatsoever, giving advices to somebody who has been working, has been winning the Champions League. So I can understand that Tuchel was upset about the situation. And I'm with Jules. I think Mr. Boehly should just go to his position, therefore bringing money and trust people in place. And not trying to revolution the football, not trying to even revolution the Chelsea Football Club, because he is going to lose the battle because he doesn't know the human aspect of the game. Therefore, if he thinks it's only data, numbers, and I don't know, fans, it's not going to work. Because at the end of the thing, the only thing which works is the pitch.
So, Craig, obviously...
I was going to say, it's not the same, but it just reminds me of a story. It tickled me years ago. It was a true story of a manager in England in the second tier who, when he took the job and was offered the job by the chairman of this particular club, the chairman turned round to him when he signed his contract and said, "Oh, just to let you know, I've also got my coaching badges." And at that point, the unnamed manager should have walked out, because what the chairman was saying was, I know a bit about football as well. I've got my badges, so I'll be keeping my eye on you. And I think it is a difficult situation. But when you pay people to manage these big clubs, then you've got to let them do what they do. And then you do, which is running the business side of things. And at the moment, it's a slight or a larger than slight concern what's going on at Chelsea off the field.
Because there are going to be investors coming in. Football, especially in the Premier League, is an attractive prospect for many a billionaire. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't know about football. What would have been the right course of action from Todd Bowley?
Find somebody who actually knows about players. And make that person the conduit of communication between him and the manager. That actually released pressure from the manager, in this case Thomas Tuchel, and released pressure from the owner and Todd Bowley. And you put the pressure on the guy in that position to then relieve the information and say, and actually digest and process the information, because you know you're going to get nonsense from an owner that thinks that knows about the game. But if you have somebody in that position, you can actually take that information, process it, digest it, and then package it differently to the manager in a way in which the manager can understand where they're coming from. So if you don't have that person in place, then of course it's never going to work. The only thing I would say, and I agree with everything that the guys have said, but the only thing that I would say, if you're Thomas Tuchel and you know that Todd Bowley doesn't know what he's talking about or has no understanding as to what is it that you want to do with the team, but he is indeed now, in effect, your boss. In every walk of life, there are moments in which you find a boss in which you do not get along with, and yet you have to make it work. So maybe there could have been a better effort from Thomas Tuchel in being perhaps more collaborative with Todd Bowley and just kind of humor him and then run his team on the field the way he would have wanted, and he would still be in the job. I think what happened here is that Thomas Tuchel said, "No, I'm not going to explain to you why I'm doing the job the way I'm doing it, and I don't want, because you're not worthy of these explanations." And if indeed that's your boss, so you're talking that way, you're not going to survive any job. So if you're Grant Potter, you better listen and be able to collaborate, because otherwise you're going to be out of the job as well.
There's no doubt going to be a lot more talk about this on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. Make sure to download that for Thursday's edition, wherever you do get your podcasts, and see what the guys think about a Premier League all-star team.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. The just taking a look at Group G standings of Manchester City with two wins from two. Another win for them, this time over Borussia Dortmund. 2-1 it finished, even though they did concede the first goal. Meanwhile, it finished 0-0 between Copenhagen and Sevilla. Craig Burley back with us. Craig, we were talking earlier, you said this was the game that you were focused on. So what was your biggest takeaway from it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't exactly a huge choice of massive games today. My takeaway was that, in some sense, City got away with it. For long periods, this looked like such a slack performance. It was almost like a pre-season game. Dortmund did a great job of stifling, and they had a good shape. And it wasn't until that excellent Bellingham goal, and it was almost like a huge kick up the backside. He made three substitutes off the back of it. Guardiola, they were chasing the game. Yeah, I mean, they dominated possession. There's no doubt about that. But they just didn't have that cutting edge, and it took a John Stones thunderbolt to get them up and running. And I mean, you can look at it either way. The keeper was on that side. Rob Green, it was on the commentary I was listening to, a former goalkeeper. He was definitely in the goalies union there, because the keeper just didn't react. And then, of course, they won the goal from you know who. So it was not a great City performance. You had Akanji at Ake at the back, you had Stones at right back, and once again, Grealish was ineffective. And it took Foden to come off the bench. It took Bernardo Silva to come on and young Alvarez to breathe some life into them. So I think it goes down as one that City got away with.
They got away with it. They came away with the win. That goal from Erling Haaland and the assist from Joao Cancelo as well. Special stuff, LA.
Outside of the foot by Joao Cancelo with his right foot, and then outside of the foot finish, flying finish from Erling Haaland, who didn't have many opportunities, didn't have a lot of space. Give credit to Borussia Dortmund and how good they were about dropping numbers in behind the ball. But what I think was very clear is that Manchester City were playing sort of stuck in second gear. It's almost as if they couldn't speed up the game, and the moment that they tried to speed up the game was after they went down 1-0. I also thought that Manchester City looked so very vulnerable in the counterattacks. There was a chance for Marco Reus where he cuts Akanji, and now he has an opportunity to shoot the ball. He hits a shot wide. And there were moments like that. If Dortmund had been able to complete that final pass or that final action, then this would have been a different outcome. Now, in terms of Erling Haaland, I don't know what else to say. I love him.
Should I tell you what Pep Guardiola said afterwards?
I love him passionately and his ability to finish chances. And I think what I love the most is the hunger that he has for goals. And that is something that you cannot teach. And he has that natural instinct that is simply special.
It's simply special. Afterwards, Pep Guardiola said he saw that goal and he thought, Johan Cruyff.
Ooh.
I mean, big name that he put him with here, and obviously he's really happy with what he's seen from his player, Craig. And I know we keep waxing on about him, but it's hard not to right now.
It's hard not to remember there was people in the summer talking about players fitting into systems and how this might not work. I mean, come on, if you're a striker, and Ali knows, if you've got all these guys around you that not tonight in particular, but as a general rule of thumb, just put balls on a plate for you, De Bruyne and Foden and Silva. He didn't have that tonight, but he had one special ball. You talked about it from Joao Cancelo outside of the boot. That's not the first time he's done that. And then you're just thinking, when that ball came in, right, he's going to have to go with the head for this. And he somehow gets that boot up high and controls it and manages to finish it. Now, there are one or two out there say, oh, it's a high boot. And I myself, at times when I've seen people score goals from overhead kicks with a defender putting their head in, I think it could be dangerous play. It's only in the penalty area. It's not seen as a high boot, so it's a legitimate goal. But the finish, and I saw his dad was in the stand, Alfie Haaland, and he was almost replicating. The last time Ralphie Haaland saw a boot that high was when Roy Keane tried to was two-footing him in the Manchester derby. I mean, it was just amazing.
When the athleticism, right? There is a still image of essentially Erling Haaland with his head below the level of the leg, where he's reaching for this ball, and he has managed to, with his ability to jump, to generate such a powerful jump, extend himself, finish, and control the finish. It's nonsense. It really is. It's a special talent, and I have no idea how anybody thought that this wasn't going to work out. Because just as it is a high level of expectation for Erling Haaland that the players around him, as Craig was mentioning, they're going to provide him with service, it's also an expectation from the players around him that if we put in somewhat of a decent service, this guy's going to get to it. So it goes both ways. Those players on the outside know that if they put the ball into a dangerous area, Erling Haaland's going to get in the end of it. And Erling Haaland knows that if he makes the right move, these guys are going to find him. It is beautiful to see. It is gorgeous.
It's amazing. Even just like he's such a predator in the box, because you see just how relaxed he is. Mm-hmm. Even when you know that the play is going to come to him, you can't coach that, can you, LA?
No. And don't ask me. I have no idea how he does it. I have no connection. Craig just mentioned, as a striker, I would know. I don't know. Because what this guy is doing is something that is, it's special. And it's high level of difficulty, high degree of difficulty. And then the finishing is elite level. It is really special. And he's only getting better, which is scary when you think about that. He still hasn't reached his ceiling. Where is his ceiling? Who knows?
Well, let's take a look at how the defending champions, Real Madrid, fared in their game today. And it might not be too much of a surprise to tell you that with the story, we were up against Leipzig. Leipzig wasted a whole host of chances. And then very late on, Madrid got two goals. Mm. One through Fede Valverde, one through Marco Asensio. So a few talking points here, Ale.
Nkunku had a bunch of chances. Real Madrid didn't look all that good. It must have been a Champions League game for Real Madrid, because it is carbon copy of what we have seen from Real Madrid, certainly going back to last season. They were uncomfortable against Leipzig. It felt like it was a difficult time for Real Madrid to really get control of the game, get a hold of the game. Offensively, they were having their difficulties. Some combinations between Vinicius and Rodrigo that ended up being dangerous. But I'm going to point out, so far, who I think is the MVP of the season for Real Madrid. And it's not Rodrigo, and it's not Vinicius, it's Fede Valverde. This guy doesn't ever get tired. And I mean ever. It's just running back and forth, inside, outside, scoring goals, productive. Today's goal, just as the weekend, high quality. Against Mallorca was a long run. Today, he's able to find a space on the right-hand side because he's been able to cover 60 yards of space with his full sprint. And then as the defender's coming out, he cuts to the inside, finishes far post. He continues to be a coach's dream for Carlo Ancelotti, because he can play him anywhere, and you know you can trust that he can do a certain job. He has been outstanding, and as I said, MVP so far. Early in the season, but so far he has been their best player and certainly their most consistent player.
Yeah, some brilliant stuff from Fede Valverde. Craig Burley, thanks so much for being with us. Don't forget, you can see a lot more of Fede Valverde and Real Madrid every single weekend on ESPN Plus. We have all La Liga's games all season for you. And Real Madrid will be in action on Sunday in a big one. They are at the Wanda Metropolitano to take on Atleti. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Juventus have lost each of their first two group stage games of the Champions League campaign for the first time ever. Just taking a look at the group age standings, they have 0 points after two games. They were beaten 2-1 by Benfica on Wednesday. as we now welcome in Stuart Robson to join us as well. Jules still with us. Robbo, how did it go so wrong for Juve?
Well, they started the game brilliantly. The first 15 minutes, they got the ball wide. They got their wing-backs high up the field. They got crosses into the box. Milik and Vlahovic looked threatening. McKennie was making runs into the box. And then they stopped doing the things that made them such a good team in that first 15 minutes. And they did exactly the same against PSG. If you've got Milik up front and you've got Vlahovic playing alongside in two players who are good in the air, and you've got Cuadrado down one side of the field and Kostic down the other, you need to get crosses into the box. That's the way they caused PSG the very few problems they did cause them. And that's the way they got their goal from a free kick. But once they stopped doing that after 15 minutes, and I don't know why they stopped doing that, they didn't switch the play out quickly enough. Juventus at the moment haven't got the midfield. All the front players are going to be clever around the box, that are going to be inventive, are going to be creative. So the one way you have to play is to get it wide, get crosses into the box and use the height of Milik, Vlahovic, McKennie making forward runs. And they didn't do that. And unless they do that, Juventus are going to have a major, major problem.
Now, how are things going to change then, Jules, if Max Allegri's sticking around?
Well, I think they have to keep him. We saw Arrivebene, who is one of the directors, if you want, saying to a fan today, he was in the city centre of Turin having lunch with the Benfica president, and one of the fans was shouting Allegri out, and Arrivebene said, OK, but you have to pay the wages of the next manager then. I just don't think right now Juve can afford to sack Max Allegri and all his staff and then hire a high-profile manager like a Thomas Tuchel, let's say, for the sake of it, after him. I just don't think they've got that money right now. And so I think, and also because they gave the contract that they gave to Allegri when he came back after Sarri and Pirlo. So it's a tricky situation because I think Agnelli, Arrivebene, they see the same thing as us. I mean, there's a point where you defend your manager. There's also a point where you have to be realistic. Things are not working. They don't attack well, like Robbo just said, or not well enough. They don't defend well. I mean, today was pretty bad defensively. Some of his changes, substitutions, make no sense whatsoever. We saw that against Salernitana on Sunday. We saw it again tonight. They have lost, as you said, for the first time, the two first games in the group stage ever. They're in a bad position in the league, although the gap between the top is not too big, but the performances have been terrible, apart from the game against Roma, I guess. So things are not going well at all, and they're going bad. But yet, I think they all know that they have to stick with him and hope for the best, really, and at some point, something improves.
Robbo, is Allegri still a good manager?
I'm sure he is a good manager. He's been a good coach over the years, but he didn't do his homework on this Benfica side, or didn't do it well enough, because I've seen Benfica four times this year and there's a certain style of play, and they're two wide players come in off the touchline and try and find space in behind the opposition's midfield. Now, when he played three at the back, Danilo on one side and Bremer on the other side had big decisions to make, whether to go and close the ball down and get time to people or drop off. They didn't either. They got caught in no man's land, and that's why Benfica started to run the game. That's why they had so much space to play. That's why they could counter-attack at pace. They could counter-attack at will. And they opened up Juventus time and time again. They should have won by more, really.
Ali, it's stunning when you hear what's going on. And as Jules was just saying there, it's not good when one of your directors is saying, well, do you want to pay for the new manager? Because that in itself almost says as if like, well, yeah, I agree with you, but we can't really afford to do it.
That is not exactly a vote of confidence, no. Is it, for your manager? And there are better ways to deal with the fans than actually expose your manager. This is exactly what has happened here, in that you're saying, hey, man, I'm seeing what you're seeing. They've been terrible. They're terrible. But we cannot afford to get rid of them. And if that's the way you're making decisions as a club, I think it paints a very clear picture as to what the issues are long-term for Juventus, short-term and long-term. If you know in your heart of hearts, if you've met as an executive board and you've actually come to the conclusion that this is not the right guy for us right now, and yet he's still the manager of this club because you fear how much it's going to cost you to get rid of him and get a new one in place, boy, it does not set you up for success. Because now you're essentially saying, we just hope it gets better. We don't really know it's going to get better. We are hoping, we think that maybe that is not how you run an elite club. Juventus, for years, has been an elite club. But the way things are looking now, not quite the case anymore.
Let's put it this way then, Jules. When you think about Allegri and you think about the managers of the world that are out there in football, how much has his stock dropped?
I think massively. I mean, I agree with Robbo in the sense that he's still a good manager. He's a big name. He's won in the past. The problem is that before, it used to be all about winning for him. And he used to say, I don't care so much how we play or the performance as long as we win. And he did win. Now he's not winning. So it's two wins now and four draws in the league and then those two defeats in two games. So in the Champions League. So it's not winning anymore. So before you had the excuse almost of saying, okay, I know this is not pretty. I know maybe the players don't really enjoy it, but at least we're winning and they must find some sort of happiness in that. Now they don't win anymore. If you're Vlahovic and they spend 80 million on you and you arrive in a team like this where you never have the ball, well, you rarely have the ball in a good position, you're isolated unless you play with Milik. But again, we clearly understand that Allegri doesn't like that anyway. You must be like, well, what are you thinking? It's terrible. Now they've got the two games against Maccabi Haifa in the Champions League where you expect them to get 6 points. In the league, they've got a couple of easy fixture, but we thought Salernitana was an easy fixture as well at home, and it turned out not to be, but you know, Monza and stuff like that before it gets harder. But God knows where they would be before the World Cup, because it could be worse before it gets better, or it might not even get better at all.
Yeah, some very important times ahead for Juve.
The question I would ask Max Allegri, or anybody who's a fan of Juventus, is what is it that your team is doing really well right now? What is it that you can hang your hat on and say, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to get this right, and then we'll work on the next thing? I don't think you can watch Juventus play right now and come to a conclusion as to what they do really well. There's nothing in this team that gives you that sort of feeling that this is a group that is getting better, that is showing signs of improvement. That's what's concerning, that you don't see you're building up to something. It feels like the worst is yet to come.
Robbo, I see you nodding along with Ale there. I'll give you the final word on Juve.
Absolutely. I saw Benfica and I've seen him 3 or 4 times. They've got a manager in Schmidt that knows exactly what he wants from his team. I could see that with every pass they were making, every movement. With Juventus at the moment, I can't tell you what Allegri wants from his side. And Ali's just said it there. He's got to hang his hat on something that they're doing quite well. And if it was me, and you haven't got Chiesa in the side at the moment because he's injured, you haven't got Paul Pogba, you're going to have to be more direct. You're going to have to get it to your wing-backs or full-backs, get crosses into the box and hope that Vlahovic and Milik will do well between them and get goals from scoring with headers. That's the way they got their goal against PSG. That's the way they got their goal tonight. They've got to get back to that over the next few weeks.
Meanwhile, another Serie A side who's having a much easier time of things in the Champions League is Napoli, off to a perfect start in their first two games. A 3-0 win over Rangers gave them another 3 points. They sit top of Group A ahead of Liverpool, Ajax and Rangers.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And make sure you stick around with us because this part of the show is finished, ESPN FC, but extra time is still to come. Frank and Robbo are going to be back with us.
Uh-huh.
And let's just say Robbo is not so tech savvy.
No, he's not.
It is fair to say you're going to have to stick around to find out why. See you then. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray, Ali Moreno, Frank Leboeuf, and Stuart Robson. Far too classy a panel to start the way we did the other day when I was on Extra Time with you.
Well, I don't know how our conversation went from wishing you a happy birthday to then going in-depth information about Stephen Nichols' colonoscopy.
No.
It is a steep drop. You know what I mean? We started here and then we went bottom of the table real quick.
If there's anyone who's going to lower the level perfectly,
well,
it's our good friend Stevie Nicks.
Naturally.
All right. Hi and happy belated birthday, Kay.
Hey.
Do you guys think Shearer's record is already in trouble as Haaland is beyond special and will score 30 plus Premier League goals every season he plays? Ale.
No, because it's a long way until we get into that conversation, first of all. And this is a sport in which today you're feeling great and tomorrow you've done your knee. It happens, and you wish that nothing like this happens to Erling Haaland, but the way he plays the game and the way he throws his body around inside the 18-yard box because of that aggression and that hunger to score goals, he's going to put himself in some tough positions. And there may be some contact that in the end may perhaps be an injury. We don't want it to happen, but I think we're a long way from having the discussion as to him breaking Alan Shearer's records.
That's a heck of a lot of goals to score, Robbo, but you can understand why people are so excited with the start he's had in the Premier League.
Did Ali just talk about going from right up there to right down there, you know, talking about injuries to a massive, a great player? Yeah. Let's hope he doesn't get injured. You can see why people are talking about him breaking Alan Shearer's record. He's been magnificent. He's a magnificent striker. He wants to score goals. He's got the technical ability to score goals. He's got the athleticism to score goals. He's playing for a team that's going to give him the chance to score goals as well. So he's got every chance if he stays fit.
But can he beat Shearer?
Probably not. Too many.
Okay.
That's too many goals.
Hold on a second. What? I thought you were selling me an Erling Haaland. Then you just agree with me.
Yeah, well, I always agree with you, Ali. You know that. I can never argue with you. You get too aggressive.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to stick with you, Robbo, for the next one. We've been talking about this in the main show. How good is Fede Valverde? Does he go under the radar when it comes to the best midfielders around Europe?
I don't think he goes under the radar at the moment because Ali was talking about him and I've been talking about him when I've done the commentaries. At the moment, Freddy Valverde is a magnificent midfield player, right winger, right wing back. If you want him to play there, he can play off the front. He can play any midfield position. He's got energy. He's seeing a pass now. He's dynamic. He wins the ball back. He's good defensively. He's an outstanding midfield player. You know, I'm not sure he's the sort of player that's going to be technically brilliant when twisting and turning, but he drives past defenders. We saw that with the goal at the weekend against Mallorca. You know, again, he played well tonight. He's an outstanding player and one of the best in the world at the moment.
Well, that's something else that you two agree on then.
Hey,
Frank, what changed Neymar? World Cup or PSG career pressure?
I don't know. Maybe he realized that he had to change something, you know, otherwise he will go nowhere. But he's done the job. That's the main thing, you know. The result of his change has been absolutely fantastic. Well, today, I have to say today that I followed the game in the Champions League. For the first half, he came back to the Neymar we don't like. You know, trying to tease the opponents and doing too much, not really focused on his game. And second half, he came back to being simpler, being effective, serving the others and scoring goals. And he's the Neymar that we love and the Neymar we have seen since the beginning of the season. But for the World Cup, what is the second World Cup or PSG career?
What changed
pressure?
Him? Was it because the World Cup's coming or the pressure at PSG?
I think it's none of it. I think it's the world pressure of fans, football fans, who made him realize that he had to change because it wasn't the Neymar that we saw. And the criticism that he was under has made him change, you know, his, maybe his philosophy of life. And yes, the World Cup is upon us. Yes, PSG maybe put some pressure. But I think he's an intelligent player. And he easily saw that his performances weren't the best and weren't the same as he used to be. So he's on his own change the way he was maybe behaving before.
I like the way that Frank used we. The Neymar we don't like and the Neymar that we like.
Yeah.
It's not just, you could have just said I.
Yeah, true. I think, and I hope, that it's neither. That it's not the World Cup, nor the PSG career pressure. That it's actually, and I know this is naive, and it's probably didn't happen in this manner, but ideally, in my mind, it's a quiet moment for Neymar. Without none of the noise, without any people around him, that he came to the realization that he's not getting the most out of his talent, and that while he's had a great career, it could be even better, and that it's up to him to make it better. And that in that quiet moment of introspection, of analysis, of objective criticism of himself, he was able to figure out, I can give more and I can do more. That's what I hope had happened. I don't think that's the way it would have happened, but that was my hope. Naive maybe, but hopefully I'm just an optimist. Maybe that's the way Neymar looked at it.
Let's give a little bit of maybe praise to Gaultier as well, the coach of PSG. When he came in, he made it quite clear he wasn't gonna stand any nonsense from Neymar. You know, if you don't do what I want, you won't be in the team. And Neymar, for once, hasn't been pandered around. So Gaultier has done a very good job with Neymar. There's no doubt about that. And of course, he's had to carry it along as well.
Yeah, but Robo, you're right. But the question is World Cup or PSG career pressure, you know? The thing is, Gaultier belongs to PSG.
PSG.
Yeah. So PSG. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go, Frank. You got an answer in the end.
You let him know, Frank. You let him know to answer the questions.
You let him know, yeah. That's the rules here on Extra Time. Robo, would Thomas Tuchel be a good fit at Juventus?
I think he's a good coach, he's a good manager, but I think we probably know that he won't be going there because they can't afford to sack Allegri and probably can't afford to take on Thomas Tuchel. Allegri's going to be there for a little while because, as I say, they can't sack him at the moment because of money-wise. It's going to be a tough, tough season for Juventus. Hopefully, Thomas Tuchel can find a big club where he can apply his trade again because he's a very good manager and a very good coach.
There's a few questions for you, actually, Robbo. Robbo, going back to Neymar here. Robbo, PSG have been impressive so far. Neymar is playing like the Neymar we used to love. Another we.
Yeah.
Do you think we might finally see... There you go, Frank. Did you send this in? Do you think we might finally see PSG winning the Champions League?
They've got a chance. I don't think they're quite good enough yet. I did them against Juventus last week, where they were brilliant for half an hour and then started to sit back and allowed Juventus to get back in the game. A very poor Juventus side on the day and managed to scrape the victory. But they were dominant for 30 minutes. So mentally, I still think they've got a problem. Technically, tactically, I think they're a very good team. They've got a great manager in Gaultier. They've got outstanding players. Have they got the mentality? I'm not sure about that. And that's what could stop them winning the Champions League.
Oh, so Robo didn't go on the journey of personal growth that I thought Neymar had gone into as well. Huh? just finding that positive energy. Apparently not.
It's funny that Stevie, during the show, like 2 weeks ago, asked me what changed at Paris Saint-Germain comparing to all the other years. And I said, well, I think they're more consistent. You know, they start from scratch and they finish the game and they're very good for 90 minutes, especially the M&M. They work together, they work more together. And since I said that, I completely see the opposite. And Robo is right, you know. It was against Juventus, they only played 30 minutes. They came back to where they were bad off, meaning the inconsistency of in during a game, you know, thinking it's too easy and make it and playing too easily, slap in a sloppy way. So it's funny that it's like Stevie's put a curse on asking me the question. That's Stevie I don't like.
That's Stevie, isn't it, who's been running the show, asking his own questions.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's what last time we worked together.
Yeah, he went rogue.
He apparently now took the role of asking questions. I thought that was your job, but apparently Stevie felt that it was necessary for him to add value to the show.
What's funnier is when you hear him say, you told us today that when you hear Stevie say, I've got a question, you almost cower.
You're like, uh-oh, here we go. What could possibly go wrong here?
But you know what? He's been doing a fine job, I have to say.
Oh, of asking questions?
That was a nice one that he put to Frank. All right, Robbo, I know you had your eye on a few of the Champions League games tonight, so don't worry if you can't answer the first part of this question. But it's Robbo, how do you evaluate Graham Potter's tactics this game? Can the current Chelsea squad fit his vision of football?
I didn't see the game because I was watching another game. But yes, of course they can. They've got outstanding players. They've got some good technical players. They've got players that I think can adapt to certain positions. He's a manager that wants them to play football. I don't think there's too many Chelsea players that won't want to play football and get on the ball and make things happen. I think as long as they adjust to his sort of slow, sometimes slow tempo, and then going into a quick tempo, there's no problems with Potter being the manager of Chelsea if the players respond to him, which I think they will.
Robo, I don't know if you know this, but you may need a software update. That's what it says on your screen. Come on, Robo.
What do you say?
I thought you were prepared for this.
I'm not sure what the question was there, but certainly I didn't see today's game, so I think he's going to be.
Robo, in the corner of your screen, it says that your Mac needs a software update, and we're seeing that here.
I still can't hear what you're saying, Kay. Sorry, go on.
Just
say
again. An update. Your audio must be awful. I thought you were saying at first because I didn't see it. He needs a software update because he needs to watch multiple games at once.
No.
That's what it is, yeah.
No.
See,
no.
All this hard work I'm doing. That's what it is.
I don't think you're getting this, Robo.
No, I wasn't.
Your computer needs a software update. It is telling you that right now.
It always needs a software update. It never goes right. It's never right. You know I'm not technical.
I figured that out.
No, you can't see that.
What button do you have to press?
Ring Stevie. He has all the answers.
Yeah, Stevie will figure it out for you.
Oh, wow.
Reset, Robo. Press the reset button.
There isn't one on it.
Just go to your...
Of course.
I'm not going to... Right. What was better, LA? Cancelo's pass or Haaland's finish?
Robo's computer.
Not at the moment. It needs an update.
Okay. I'm going to say Haaland's finish. The pass was gorgeous, but the pass would be nothing without the finish. And the way that he controlled his body and then controlled the contact and the way he redirected that ball into the goal with such control, high level of difficulty, I'm going to say the finish.
That was a more positive Haaland answer, wasn't it, Robbo?
Absolutely, yeah. He was straight down the line. Haaland's brilliant, as he's always said. Didn't he once say he prefers Haaland to his own son? I think he remembers him saying that a few weeks ago. Oh,
that would be Pedri.
That would be Pedri.
Well, maybe.
Blasphemy. Okay, well, that would be Pedri.
He's got two sons.
I think you'll sell your son for any player by the sound of it.
Well, I do have two kids, so...
Yeah. Too many by the sound of it.
We're going to have to let you go, Robbo, because you're going to have to go and update your Mac. And
good luck with that.
Thanks so much for being with us, Frank and Alex. Robbo, we might see you next time on Extra Time.
Who knows? Maybe.
Or maybe not.